Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, if you've been listening to us over the last, oh gosh, I don't even know how many years now, but you'll probably recognize that a very common theme on American Variety is that we have guests often who have a really big dream. I mean, they're visionary in some way, and they have the kind of goal or ambition that, you know, the saner, more conventional people around them tell them, no, don't do that. It's just going to drive you crazy, and you'll never be able to succeed at that. And yet, they do, you know. So I've had people on who've done all kinds of things. I mean, there was a guy once who reenacted Columbus's voyage of discovery in an authentic wooden sailing ship, identical to the last detail to Columbus's ship, as far as we know, and the crew were dressed and equipped and outfitted in exactly the same way, and they got becalmed in the Sargasso Sea and nearly died, but they made it. And, oh, not too long ago, we had a man on who was whose vision, and he's doing it, is reforesting the Earth's giant ancient trees, you know, the big sequoias and all of the trees around the world that are in basically extinct, grand old forests. And he's finding ways to clone the trunks of trees that are left and trying to reestablish those forests. I had, you know, speaking of sailing again, a one-armed British guy who sailed alone across the Atlantic and hit a hurricane and so on. Can you imagine doing that? You know, I mean, it's one-handed sailing is one thing, but literally is another thing. And, you know, there was a woman who became one of the first two or three female commercial aviation pilots in the United States back in the late 60s. It was a great gal, you know, so people like that. I mean, there's a guy who's been with teams of people trying to solve the enduring mystery of where Amelia Earhart went down and thinks he may have found her and is doing DNA testing on some biological material that was left behind in the campsite where he thinks that they died. And so people like that who just pursue interesting, crazy things and often succeed, right? So my guests today are in that category. Dennis and Claudia Chamberlain are pursuing a project called Atlantica, which is an undersea colony where people will live. Welcome, Dennis and Claudia.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Nice of you to be here. So Dennis is a NASA contract manager who's worked on prototype advanced life support systems for Moon and Mars missions. So, you know, this is not totally an off-the-wall thing. He has a professional background in doing just this kind of thing, and so it's a realistic endeavor for him from his perspective. Claudia's his wife and CEO of their nonprofit, which is called League of the New Worlds, which promotes colonization of both space and the oceans. So, League of the New Worlds, well, that has kind of a New Age sound to me, and your project called Atlantica sounds ambitiously New Age, but they want to establish, as I said, the first human undersea colony, and they're quite serious and are making progress on it. So, Dennis, why don't you open up and just tell us about Atlantica?
Well, I think you called it right down the center of the highway. It is New Age, and it's not New Age in a spiritual sense, but it's New Age because we're looking at creating a undersea culture, undersea society that is totally unique from our land-dwelling brothers, and we will be using and utilizing different technologies that that are just new, and they represent a new culture and a new society, a new way of living. So it is New Age, and what we're looking at, for instance, is a culture that employs a waste-free system.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. That was a question I was going to ask you, so go ahead.
And that we teach here our children on the surface of the earth here that we are generators of wastes and that we have to manage our wastes. But in our culture, we will teach that there are no wastes, that everything is a resource. Instead of having a waste processing system, we will have a resource recovery system, so that everything that we generate will be a resource for the next generation of product. So it's a schooling of a new culture for a new age, so that our children will grow up in a society that is not choking to death from its wastes, because we don't teach that we have any, but that we have resources that we can use for every subsequent generation of product. And it's those kinds of things that we're looking at as we create this new culture under the sea.
Well, just that one little aspect, let's call it little aspect, of your large goal of having an undersea colony that's permanently inhabited, just that one thing of dealing with waste to the point that there's zero fallout at the end of the pipeline of use of materials that would require a huge amount of thinking and technology, and maybe we'll have time to get into that later. But even on the space station, they still generate waste and bring it back to Earth. So you're talking about doing something that's not even done in space. So where will it be located?
We are looking at a footprint of the ocean floor off of the central Florida coast, somewhere around Port St. Lucie, Jupiter Inlet, about 15 miles off the coast. We have to go out there and survey those sites to find exactly the right location for the colony. But we have pretty much figured that that's where we're going to be.
Will it be in the Gulf Stream?
It will be in the center of the Gulf Stream, or at least on the western edge. And we will be there on purpose, because while we are there, we can become a fixed monitoring point for the whole of the North Atlantic Ocean. As it orbits over our head each day, we can analyze ocean that is 35,000 miles in length over 1 year. Because as we sit still in the middle of the Gulf Stream, it orbits over our head, the entire gyre of the North Atlantic. So
yeah, I never thought about it that way. So you could sit in a fixed point and all of the world's oceans would eventually circulate over.
Well, at least the North Atlantic.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Huh. Well, who will be aboard, Claudia? You know, initially, I guess it would be just a kind of a skeleton crew of people to check things out, right? But how will that work? Ultimately, let's say, who would be aboard this thing?
Well, like we said, it's to be a colony, not just a scientific outpost or a station, which a lot of in Antarctic or places you'll have stations or outposts. But to be a colony, you're talking about families. And that's, of course, what our goal is that there will be scientists and engineers, but they'll have their families with them and individuals who have just always wanted to live underwater. And a lot of people always have the misconception that if it's a permanent station, you therefore mean that the occupants come and can never leave. But that's not what it means. It means it's going to be permanently habitated. But the people can come and go as they wish. If they want to go to the land and go to the movies or go visit on vacation, visit their families, there won't be anything to stop them, especially since the station will be at one atmosphere, just like a space station or moon or Mars base will be. There won't be any decompression issues, so it'll be very safe, and anyone, they can come and go at any time. But it, just like the colony started here in the New Worlds, we're looking at families coming, and it'll expand from there.
Okay, so it's like colonists, or in a way like people living on a remote island off of a mainland, and they can get to shore and do what they want to do sometimes, but they won't do it every day. They're not going to be commuting to work from here. So,
well, actually, that's not entirely accurate. There will be submarine trips to the surface several times a day.
Oh, is that right?
There'll be a surface platform with boats.
Wow.
So that the colonists will have free access to the shore several times a day, and yes, they can have day jobs ashore.
Huh,
the only thing that would prevent them from reaching the shore is if we had a really bad weather day and where the seas were just too rough to get a boat back and forth. But generally speaking, the colonists will have free access to the shore each and every day.
Okay, well, that's a lot less remote and isolated than I pictured it being then. So,
for some reason, there is this idea that because it's an ocean colony, it's remote and isolated, but actually that's not true at all. It's pretty much not any more remote or isolated than any other Florida community.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dennis and Claudia Chamberlain, who are the visionary progenitors and project leaders of a project called Atlantica, the prototype undersea colony. Well, Dennis, what will the habitat be like? What will it physically look like?
Well, we have been generating several different design concepts, and we haven't decided on the exact one that we will be building for the offshore colony. And yet, it will be a very unique design that accommodates communities, that accommodates the needs of a community. And yet at the same time, we understand that every family or every single individual who lives there will require their privacy. So the colony will consist of habitat structures that are linked by tunnels to one another. And in the center of the community will, of course, be the community structure where the colonists can come and get together for movies or whatever their community activity is for that particular day, or they can just go hang out. And so it all depends on what the final look of the structure is. And, of course, that's related to cost and price. Mm. But we are looking at several different designs.
Do you know how it would be powered?
Yes. We are situated in the middle of the most energetic power stream on Earth, which is the Gulf Stream. Mm. We would be fools not to utilize that power stream that is just passing beside us every minute of every day. So we will be using hydroelectric generators for a vast majority of the power at the station. We will also have wind generators located on our surface platforms, and we will have solar panels, of course. But you talk about green. We are absolutely green. We will gather every single watt of our energy from our surroundings.
What about the atmosphere? What about getting oxygen to it? Is that brought in from above in tanks, or do you generate it chemically, or what?
Actually, oxygen is not an issue at all.
Because you're in the water.
No, we don't need that much oxygen.
Okay.
We can, with a very minimal amount of energy, draw oxygen from the surface down to the colony, and that's not an issue or a problem at all. That can be done probably by a high school class.
Science project.
It's very simple to get oxygen.
Just run a big soda straw.
We're not worried about oxygen, but having said that, we are very concerned about the buildup of carbon dioxide, and that's going to be a technical issue that we will have to tackle. And it's going to be energy intensive, and we're looking at those technologies now that we will be experimenting with on our project.
Hmm. But if you can just pull atmospheric air down to you, can't you just push out carbon dioxide?
Absolutely, you can do that, but that's extremely expensive in terms of energy and how much air you would require for each individual colonist. You would have an enormous cloud of air passing in and out of there.
Hmm.
So for the same amount of money that you would spend to do that, it's way more efficient to scrub the carbon dioxide with various technologies that we're looking at.
Okay. And the technology advances all the time, and things that used to be prohibitively expensive even for governments get to be affordable for small groups, I guess, over time.
We are one of those groups that are honing and developing that new CO2 scrubbing technologies.
Oh, good. And I know NASA works on that all the time, and you're involved in those technologies and can certainly see the reports and see the advances that are made. So that's a good perspective, a good catbird seat to be in for your other side project here, which is an enormous side project, right? So you mentioned that you would end up having zero waste. I mean, you know, so people are thinking, well, you know, what do you do about human waste and so on? What problems do you envision, both biological or technical or psychological, with staying under the ocean for long periods of time? The things that you've kind of had to think through and pay particular attention to as possible problems?
Well, I am the poster child for all of the negative things that a colonist would encounter. I'm a claustrophobic. I'm ADHD. And I get cabin fever at the drop of a hat.
As long as you don't have bad breath.
Well, there are chemicals that we depend on, like Altoids and those kinds of things.
It was a joke.
Well, you have to watch out how you're joking with an undersea colonist.
With an engineer, too. Take everything literally.
Right. But we are concerned that we build our structures and our colony and our architecture to be ergonomic in the sense that we are creating a whole new cultural venue for human beings. And how do they respond in very closed and tight spaces? We have taken a great deal of interest in what has happened in the various space stations of Russia and the United States and how the astronauts have dealt with these situations. Claudia and I have lived in very small habitats for over 30 days, smaller than an SUV. We're still married.
Did you drive across country in a VW Beetle or what?
No. But those kinds of things really taught us a lot about how human beings live in very small and enclosed environments. And it's very important how they're designed.
Mm-hmm.
For example, paint colors, light spectrum.
Sure.
how to change that light spectrum during various parts of the day mm-hmm. as your circadian rhythms change.
Right.
And all of those things are very important. Also, window sizes, views, the spectral changes at 150 feet of ocean water. All of those things will factor into how our habitat is designed. We're not going to go down there and live in a can because nobody can live in a space like that. We're going to go down there and live in ultra-modern, highly technically designed spaces that are intelligently designed and made for longevity.
You are listening to American Variety Radio, and I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're here talking with Dennis and Claudia Chamberlain, who are putting together and proceeding with a very visionary project to develop an undersea colony off the coast of Central Florida called Atlantica that people will live in, and not just explorers and scientists and so on, but families will live in a normal way on a long-term basis. So you mentioned earlier, Dennis, that this facility, this habitat, would function as a monitoring station for the health of the world's oceans, or at least those in the Northern Hemisphere, because it's in the bottom and the middle of the Gulf Stream. But does it have other purposes? For example, will you be doing tourism as part of your operational plan or your business plan to bring people in like they would to a hotel and earn money that way?
I mean, absolutely. We are looking at every possible way to make sure that we are a viable project economically, and certainly tourism is part of that. We will have timeshares available to those who sign up for those things. We will have laboratories available for scientists and universities to lease. We will provide venue for motion picture producers. Mm-hmm. And if we can make a buck at it, we intend to do that. We will also be looking at power production for selling back to Florida Power and Light Company. We will be looking at aquaculture of different kinds. So if it is possible to make a buck out there, we're going to be doing that because we have to in order to survive.
What about, and I have to say that I've read your website, which is beautifully done, and I think there is, going back to that New Age theme that we started with, there's a broader purpose that you're trying to demonstrate that humanity's destiny is to go beyond living on the blobs of land that happen to be sitting in the middle of oceans, whether it's space or the oceans, right? But our destiny is to expand. So that, is that part of your, not operationally, but part of your philosophical
driver? Well, that question is probably the most frequent question that we're asked. And it comes down to the why are you doing this question. I can imagine that when people ask Christopher Columbus why he did what he was doing, he would probably give people the same blank stare that I give them, because it's like, how can you miss this?
Yeah.
Why is this just not obvious to you? Mm-hmm. We do this for so many reasons. We talked about the fact that the Earth is in desperate need of an ecological monitoring platform on the world's oceans. We are poisoning our oceans. It's the same effect as injecting urine into your bloodstream every day, but we're doing it on a global scale. We have no idea what's happening to our oceans. We can go on for hours about that. We can talk about the nominal expansion of the human species into the oceans and space. Why do we do that? Well, because we're humans. That's what we are created to do. That's part of our genome, is to expand into these places. We need to be there because the Earth is crowded. It's overcrowded. We need to expand the human population into areas that are less crowded to create less stress among the people of the Earth, less fighting, less wars. We need to go there because it is a perfect platform for creating a whole new culture with new technologies and new outlooks on the human experience. So I could go on and on and on. But I think it would have been exactly the same answer that Columbus would have given for expanding to the new worlds. And even at his best answer, even if you had set him down and grilled him for hours, he would not have been able to even answer 1% of what actually happened after he expanded into the new worlds. He had no clue,
sure,
no guess as to what magnificent thing was going to happen when he went on his voyage of discovery. And we are the same way. We do not know. We have no clue, not even 1% of the knowledge of what's going to happen when we go there. We just know that it's the human thing to expand, and we intend to expand. And unless I die and they throw dirt in my face first, we will we will do this, and we will make it.
Something tells me you won't be buried on land in any case. Well, how far along are you?
We are very far along on the preparations for the mission, and we're very far along in planning for the colony itself. We've been working on the designs for the colony almost full-time since 1990. So we have a team of engineers that have been with us that whole time. We have many, many days of experience under the ocean testing out our technologies and our concepts, and we are ready to roll.
I think your mission is called, what, Leviathan?
That is the habitat name, the Leviathan. The Leviathan habitat is designed to teach ideas and concepts of longevity, long-term cruise. It will be a 90-day mission, which is significantly longer than the previous world record mission of 69 days. We will have a crew of 75 aquanauts that come through the habitat one day at a time. We will have three aquanauts that are there permanently for 90 days. And so it's a very big mission, very significant mission, a world record mission that we will learn many things.
And so I'm assuming those would be people with a professional slant on what you're doing there and not the tourists, not the, you know, the run-of-the-mill visitors.
But, well, our crew is very diverse. Our youngest crew member is 10 years old.
Oh, is that right?
And our oldest crew member is in his 80s. Mm-hmm. And so we have physicians, we have astronauts, we have professional aquanauts, we have teachers, just about every kind of calling and background you can imagine we have coming through our habitat during that mission. And that's done on purpose. We are there to demonstrate that we can maintain and occupy an undersea colony successfully with all kinds of different people.
And there must be some selection process. You can't just totally let anybody come to this thing. Do you have any kind of vetting or sort of, you know, you look at their resume or you interview them? And, I mean, do you select people to some extent just to make sure they're sane and, you know, and they're going to be functionally productive and reasonable citizens of the habitat for the time they're there?
Are you asking about the 90-day mission or for the...
Yeah, I guess it's a different answer, really. So let's go to the full-time one.
Okay, to be colonists.
Yeah.
The first thing is the people have to have the innate desire that they wish to come and someone who really wants to live under the sea. So, of course, they approach us. Mm. And there is a process where people, if they're serious, they apply for a position as a permanent colonist. And there is paperwork that's filled out, profiles and things. And then we have a board of directors and people who review those. And as it gets closer to the time, then there will be more things of going through some psychological profiling and things to make sure that even though you want to do it, is it something that you're going to really be able to cope with and be comfortable with? And,
sure, yeah.
But it's amazing that we do have families with children and people that are very interested. Just like some people have always wanted to live in Hawaii, or some people want to live in the mountains, or some people want to live in the desert. There's people who just really want to live under the sea.
And we also do criminal background checks.
I would think.
Because after day 100, you don't want to turn around and see somebody staring at you with an X saying, "Here's Johnny."
For sure, you know, and even, you know, I don't know, drug tests or whatever. I mean, there must be.
Exactly.
You know, it's not as rigorous as getting, you know, a ride on the space shuttle, but I would think it's more than checking into your local Holiday Inn, too. So, well, who's funding this, Dennis?
Well, there are many different funding avenues that we have been fortunate enough to be a part of our expeditions. There are private companies, there are private individuals, and we even are involved in different kinds of marine equipment sales.
Hmm.
So you name it, we've got a revenue stream attached. It's very creative, and it has to be.
Sure.
Because, I mean, we're what, in a near depression or actual depression, and we're trying to do something like this. And we are very creative, and we stay up nights thinking up ways to fund this, and so far we've been successful.
You're listening to American Variety Radio again. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Claudia and Dennis Chamberlain, who are the two leaders of a project called Undersea Colony Atlantica. Well, Dennis, you grew up in Oklahoma, which is not exactly oceanfront. How did you get the idea to do this?
Well, the neat thing about growing up in Oklahoma, and I'm a Native American by heritage, is that living on the plains there, we have wonderful teachers there, and there are wonderful things called libraries. And the teachers pointed us the way to the library, and they said, in there is any world that you want. And so, wow, I got involved in science fiction books, and then through the Scholastic Book Services, the Weekly Reader folks, I bought books on diving and on underwater exploration. And it just sunk in. And then I found myself every day after school sitting in front of my little Zenith television watching Sea Hunt and Mike Nelson and My Hero. And I guess my whole fate was just set by all those books and Mike Nelson.
And today with the internet, it's even easier for kids to catch fire about something that's not right in front of their eyes, too. So, you know, many husbands have trouble getting their wives to agree to let them even go fishing on Sunday morning. And yet, Claudia, you're in this visionary scheme as a full partner. So how did you get involved?
Well, first of all, anywhere Dennis goes, that's where I want to be. My father, Richard Sheeler, grew up in Pennsylvania, and he was always very interested in underwater. And as a young man, he invented his own hard hat helmet with friends pumping air to him with a bicycle pump and things just so he could go underwater into the lakes. And then during World War II, when he was stationed over in the Pacific in Guam and Tinian, he created his own underwater breathing apparatus from bailout bottles from the Japanese aircraft and things. And he would go diving before scuba diving was actually made. By Jacques Cousteau yet.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
He would get fish for his men. And he's just always had a real affinity to the undersea world. So he had five daughters before he finally had a son. So as each one of us became old enough to get certified, we were certified scuba divers and became his dive partners, diving with my father, and just thought that was kind of a normal way of life. And so everything feathered together nicely when Dennis and I met, and it was a natural fit for to have an undersea lifestyle.
Well, gosh, it sounds like you both have a big basket of explorer and imagination and adventurous genes in you. It's highly compatible, right? So we're just about out of time, Dennis. Just give me, if you could, a 30-second answer. Which frontier has the brighter future for mankind, do you think? The oceans on Earth or space?
The answer is both. Certainly, as we explore space, we will expand human territories, and as we explore the oceans, we will also expand the human presence. The ocean exploration is a whole lot cheaper than space exploration, so in my humble opinion, it will be first and best.
Okay, good answer. And as always, we could talk for another half hour about this fascinating subject, but it has been really interesting, and if people want to learn more can go to your website at underseacolony.com, just like it's spelled, underseacolony.com. There's a book you can buy there written by Dennis about the project, and I sure appreciate the two of you for being on with us on American Variety. Thanks to all of you for listening out there. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.